These negative beings are parasitical in nature. They feed off of emotions, negative emotions in particular.
Hi, this is Kim Russell with Tunnel Talk. Today's guest is James Bartley. James Bartley is the host for the Cosmic Switchboard Show. James has investigated alien abductions, military abductions, alien technology back engineering, secret space programs, ancient mysteries, and surface level conspiracy fact for over 30 years. James has had his own ET and cryptid encounters. He is a former member of the military intelligence community and is an independent historian specializing in military history, intelligence, counterintelligence, and special operations.
What are reptilians? There are essentially three kinds if one wants to break it down. There are the extraterrestrial reptilians who literally come here from other worlds within our cosmos, within our plane of existence. They come here in spaceships or they can come here in stargates. There's also interdimensional reptilians and another group of reptilians are subterrestrial. They have lived here all along, reside in deep underground cavern systems. And there are, in truth, a number of civilizations beneath the surface of the earth.
James has lectured in many places, including Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Memphis, Tennessee, Las Vegas, Nevada, San Diego, California, Roswell, New Mexico, and the legendary UFO friendship campouts at the Lil Alay Inn in Rachel, Nevada, adjacent to the infamous Area 51 Groom Lake complex in central Nevada. James spoke at the RepCon near Manchester, England, which was the first ever conference dedicated to the reptilian research, and most recently at the Paradigm Shift Summit in the Surfer's Paradise in Australia.
They found out that a lot of these people that had been diagnosed as paranoid schizophrenics were in fact being malignly influenced by these unseen entities. Now, however,
James, I've had you on our show before. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you, Kim. It's good to be back, and it's good to talk to an old friend. We did a lot of work in the old days together. It's great working with you again.
I bet you there's been a lot going on since we've talked last. Do you want to go ahead and share a little bit about your information? What have you been doing lately?
Well, mostly been doing podcast work, but also working with abductees in my labs and people wanting to talk about their experiences, consults, and putting plans together. My colleagues and I are going to put together a panel within a couple of weeks of really well-known and some not so well-known, but still very knowledgeable about the spiritual warfare and archontic aspects of narcissistic abuse. Because as you know, Kim, and others in our field know, when the narcissistic abuser is in your face and they're doing all this stuff to you, there's entities and forces working through that individual. And then you scale it up and you see that this whole Luciferian system arrayed against us is just one form, is one collective form of narcissistic abuse is what it is, gaslighting on a grand scale. So Eve Lorgan, an old friend of mine, I'm sure you're familiar with her work. She was also a protege of Barbara Bartholik, as was I. Candy Turner, Carla Turner, was the first protege of Barbara Bartholik. And as far as the template is concerned, the framework of the reptilian overlordship investigation into expanding outward from there, studies into my lab's military abductions, mind control associated with alien abductions. Because my definition of a my lab is someone who is first a legitimate alien abductee who also happens, due to their genetic profile, bloodlines, oftentimes, I believe, karmic past life incarnations, oftentimes they are likewise taken by deep black elements of the military aerospace community and utilized in operations, mind control training, what have you. So we work from the standpoint of this is what's going on. We know what's going on. And the narcissistic aspect comes through because these people that are hybridized, the abusers, the perps of our society, if you just take a look at some of these serial killers, right, like Ted Bundy, Richard Ramirez, and people like them, these are extreme narcissists. And like Ted Bundy himself said that he had an entity, a monster working through him. And as a child, he said that there were scaly monsters coming out of his closet. Go figure. That's what happens. Entities frequently use portal entries in what they call wardrobes in England and Australia. But in America, we call closets, basically, walk-in closets. So these entities would come out of portals and closets and mess with people. And that's the case with Ted Bundy. He was messed with by what he called scaly creatures, monsters coming out of his closet. And then lo and behold, down the track, he becomes a prolific serial killer. But if you watch any of the interviews with him, he's so narcissistic, just always laughing, always just full of himself. When you see footage of him in the court cases, because he represented himself, because no one else was good enough to represent him, he would represent himself. Imagine that. I mean, he's standing there in front of the families that he's tormented, whose loved ones he's killed, and he's representing himself in a truly narcissistic fashion. Well, this narcissistic abuse is reptilian. It's alien in nature. So that's one of the purposes we want to get across to the audience with our panel, to point out that this abuse comes from a whole spectrum of of sources. One essential source, the supernatural, our contact interdimensional source, but it manifests in numerous ways, psychically, energetically, psychologically, etc., etc. So that's one of the things that we're bringing out in this panel. And Eve Lorgan, she, like I said, she was a protege of Barbara Bartholik, so she has that great fundamental grounding of an understanding of the reptilian overlordship, reptilian abductions, and military abductions. So I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, I read a lot of her stuff before when we first started talking, and I know that this kind of thing progresses, and it starts a whole chain of events, and it just keeps progressing and progressing and progressing to where people start becoming familiars, and they just start identifying, and just goes on and on, and it's just crazy. And for the record, can you kind of explain to the viewers, when you say narcissistic, you know, people want to just think of a personality disorder of a type where people are selfish and things like that, but can you kind of cap it to what you're really talking about when you talk about narcissism?
That's a very good point, Kim. The term narcissism comes from the old Greek story of Narcissus, this Greek individual that would stand in front of a looking glass or look at his image in reflective water over and over and over. He was enamored with himself, right, full of self-adoration. So that's where the term narcissism comes from. A narcissist is, in my considered opinion, almost invariably a hybrid, usually, but not always, a reptilian or Draco-human hybrid. And as such, not only is their genetic profile largely reptilian, unseen, but if you know what to look for as far as the anatomical features and whatnot, you can, like Ted Bundy, for example, Richard Ramirez, these guys were full-on reptilian or Draco hybrids. So not only is there a genetic profile which strongly leans in the reptilian direction, but the outgrowth of that, if you will, is neurological differences. So okay. A narcissist would lack the frontal lobe impulse control that you and I would have that restrains us from acting out in an impulsive, selfish, spiteful manner. To a narcissist, if it feels good to them, they're going to do it. It doesn't matter if they hurt others in the process, because the way they work is they have this remarkable ability to morph reality to suit their latest lie. If they're lying about this, like say, okay, I'm not holding this up. If you think I'm holding this up, you're a liar. You're the one with the problem. See, they have this way of just twisting everything around, but it's the energetic force and the consciousness working through the narcissist making that statement that gives us its power. To someone on the receiving end who's been brought up in a culture of abuse, family abuse, cult abuse, whatever the case may be, it can instill in them this paralysis, like where they even question himself. Is he really holding that? No, I'm not going to argue or question him if he really believes he's not holding it up, right? I just, you know, let him be, let him have his way. And that's how it starts. They begin to let the narcissist have their way. And there's a number of ways this manifests itself, right? The freeloading mentality, the mooch freeloader mentality, the kleptomaniac mentality, the serial abuser mentality, physical and sexual abuse, psychological abuse mentality. It's all tied up in extreme narcissism. And that's what we're going to bring out too, is we're going to scale it up and talk about how this whole system is narcissistic in nature. So when getting back to the neurology, when someone, an individual hybrid in our example, is lacking in the frontal lobe capacity, that means they lack the impulse control. And that's one thing that a lot of these serial killers and abusers have, is they lack the frontal lobe capacity. And since they have no empathy and everything revolves around them in a truly selfish, perverse, sadistic desire to get what they want, be it, you know, sexual gratification, their ability to assert their will, domination over others, whatever the case may be. That's how this abuse manifests. And we're going to talk in the panel about, you know, the guru aspect of this, how there are so many self-help type gurus out there that are narcissists. They actually have their own harem and what amounts to an astral harem, if they can astrally bilocate and have astral sex or astral rape with others. So we're going to talk about all these issues. We're going to cram as much in as we can in a panel, and probably going forward, we'll probably have other panels in the future about just the narcissistic aspect, as well as other subjects we're going to delve into.
I'm really super familiar with what you're talking about, and I've met a lot of people like that. I'm sure we all have. You know, we don't really understand what's going on, and you're kind of just putting it together to where, you know, it's really going to help a lot of people. I'm going to venture to say that narcissism is really another word for psychopathy, or, you know, psychosis, or psychopathic. And, you know, you hear all the time that our world is run by psychopaths, and so you're kind of terming it narcissistic. What is there a difference, or when did we go from psychopath to narcissist?
Because the traits of the psychopath are essentially narcissistic in nature. This notion that the end justifies the means. For example, in the psychological evals that many corporations, that many institutions, government agencies have, that they give to the applicants. This is why in Wall Street, so many of the high climbers, the fast climbers, are narcissist, because they have no qualms about doing things that will harm other agencies, other institutions, other people, as long as it benefits them and by extension, the corporation, the financial investment bank in our example. The person who originally came up with the psych eval as we understand it today was Professor Henry Murray, who was a psychologist who worked for the Office of Strategic Services, the forerunner to the CIA. He was a cross-dressing sadist, sadomasochist, right? So of all people, psychologists, go figure, this is what he was all about in his private life. And he's the one that came up with this, what became known later as a psychological evaluation. Further down the track in the 1950s, this same Professor Henry Murray mind-controlled Theodore Kaczynski in Harvard, who later became infamous as the Unabomber. So when you watch these half-baked, watered-down documentaries on Netflix or Stan or whatever, wherever you find these documentaries, that they always leave that bit out. But there's a book you can find called Harvard and the Unabomber that goes into detail about this. Okay. So the guy who created the template for all future psychological evaluations, which are used by government institutions as well as corporations, Henry Murray, mind control Theodore Kaczynski in the 1950s. This predates a lot of the discussions that later came down the track about MKUltra. A lot of people have this notion that MKUltra really kicked into high gear in the 1960s, but you can go further back to the 1950s when this Henry Murray guy was doing his thing with Theodore Kaczynski. And so you fast forward to the present time, and for some time now, so many of these psychological evaluations for corporations, for Wall Street investment banks, for law enforcement agencies, they ask the same question oftentimes a number of different ways. And in law enforcement, for example, they're looking for aggression. They're looking for latent aggression. So if the questions are coached in such a way as to absolve the applicant of any responsibility or guilt or accountability for their actions, right? What they're looking for are applicants who will answer affirmatively in a way that they are aggressive, they will act in a certain way in a certain scenario, right? And then, of course, it goes deeper than that because the system knows who the reptilian hybrids are in their midst and who the applicants are. And indeed, the way I understand the high consciousness of the way these entities and these intelligences work through individuals, it's the entities themselves that prompt these people to want to become law enforcement, you know, people in the first place. And so the system is geared up to employ, to screen out everyone who has empathy, that has conscience, that has a working frontal lobe, right? You know, psychology follows neurology, which follows genetics every time, right? So if you screen people out from your organizations that have empathy, you know, all that stuff, and then what you have left are a bunch of psychopaths, well, these narcissists, to get back to your question, Kim, it's if it feels good, do it. And to them, feeling good is all about attaining mastery, control, domination of people or situations, right? So I'm one of those guys. Oh, defund the police? Oh, you mean the ones that are going around shooting people's dogs for fun? That are going around warrantless home invasions and shooting up families and killing their dogs for no reason? Yeah, defund them. They can go to hell as far as I'm concerned,
right?
Because they're part of the system, okay? I have no qualms about them getting attacked by Antifa or BLM. And the way the system works is they're going to protect those psychopath, narcissistic cops. They're not the ones that are going to be attacked by BLM and Antifa. What they're going to do is those cops that have empathy, that have understanding, that put videos out which get them fired because they're talking about the corruption and how fake everything is, right? They're the ones that are going to send up, they're going to send them into dangerous situations with no backup, and they're going to get killed off. That's how they've done it in police departments from day one. If you have someone, a nonconformist, in your midst, you routinely send them out to the most dangerous places on the dangerous missions with no backup. And oftentimes they will set them up. They'll set them up, you know, with criminals that are under their control that were released from prison or jail that they still have a leash on. Okay, so-and-so cop's going to show up. You take care of this guy. Don't worry, nothing's going to happen to you. And see, that's where the narcissist gets a lot of power too, is this notion that the system will support them. It's a narcissistic system. That's why when people were saying, oh, well, the mass arrests are coming. Oh, it's, you know, they're all going to be sent off to Gitmo. Well, which Justice Department are they talking about? Are they talking about the Just Us Department? Is that the department, the Justice Department they're talking about, which is just chock full of narcissists and perps? And that's almost like a self-inflicted wound. It's gonna, they're going to arrest themselves? That didn't compute to me.
I kind of wondered. That's opening up so many questions for me right now. So before we get into your actual panel and when that's going to be, what I'm kind of getting is you know, you have a lot of branches of people doing investigations, and you, you know, whether it's like paranormal, whether it's alien, whether it's psychological, it all kind of goes hand in hand. We're all trying to figure out the same thing. And for instance, you're talking about archons and things like that, and you know, that might describe someone being possessed or hearing voices or having personality disorders or being aggressive or whatever. In particular, for the ghost hunting and the paranormal, like you have poltergeist activity and you have, you know, you see spirits and you see all this stuff. What is the correlation between the paranormal and the archontic and the, I want to venture to say, you know, entities, interdimensionals, things like that. How is that all relating to each other? And are we on the same track, but we don't know it? Do you know, do you kind of understand the question?
Yes, that's yet another very good question, Kim. See, we humans are subject to influences seen and unseen. And because of the way this narcissistic system has been created, science, bogus science, I might add, has become a religion unto itself. It's got all its own dogmas. It's got all its own defense systems and defense shields. And it's reinforced by the might of the lying narcissistic media, right? So you have a narcissistic media, narcissistic school system that indoctrinates cultural Marxism, indoctrinates students, and then going into the universities. So you have all these young people who, students that have been empowered in a way, right? They've been empowered, but also indoctrinated. So their angst, which has been amped up, their anger and their resentment is being fueled and channeled.
They get bullied. I mean, the bullying that goes on, you know, just growing up and having to defend yourself, is a bullying a early form?
I would say so, because for some reason, I think that some children are more susceptible to these external influences and spiritual influences, and especially now because there's so many children damaged and children becoming adolescents, becoming teens, becoming young adults, damaged by this allopathic medical system. So they're autistic is the term that they use. So I'm talking about the and my heart really goes out to the families that have to, you know, deal with this. So when you're talking about a severely damaged autistic child, we're talking about the ones that you see in the malls running headlong into pillars, which I've seen before. The ones running around in circles on the ground and just, you know, headbutting and attacking other kids. Okay. In, I think it was in Melbourne, Australia, a couple of years back, there was some woman or a young girl, I can't remember the exact details, was murdered by an autistic young adult, right? Teen young adult. So we're starting to see this come home the roost, where you have all these severely brain damaged individuals who've been given the generic diagnosis of being autistic. And I know this is going to be unpopular to hear, okay, but we're talking about, you know, severe neurological damage here, which in itself opens, especially with the aluminium content of so much of what passes for medicine treatments, and even in the food supply, what passes for the narcissistic food supply, mm-hmm. all that aluminium, as they call it in Australia and England, you know, wells up in people's brains, and it leads to dementia, early onset dementia, Alzheimer's, etc. But I also believe in and of itself, the aluminium will suppress the frontal lobe and make it even easier for these entities to take over. Because getting back to your question, the entities are all around us. Anyone who's listened to the interviews of Jerry Marzinski, who's now become a pretty good friend of mine, and Sherry Sweeney, his colleague, they will talk about, because Jerry spent 30 years in working with psychotic patients in, at the time, the world's largest insane asylum in Georgia. Later on, he went to work, spent many years in the correctional institutions in Arizona working with psychotic patients. And the commonality he found was that these intrusive thoughts and what's been written off by, again, the dogma science, the dogma medical system, as hallucinations, voices in the head, these aren't just hallucinations. It's not a chemical imbalance either. That's just, it's made up thing, like climate change. This is another made up thing by these narcissistic, they circle the wagons with their peer-reviewed journals, and they just knock down any kind of information that goes against their controlling narrative. What the voices in the head are actual entities influencing, putting thoughts in. Thoughts influence behavior, which, if left unchecked, the behavior becomes, part of their character, part of their destiny. And certain drugs like crystal meth, the whole family of amphetamines, and notice that Ritalin, which is an amphetamine, has been given increasingly, has been for some time, to children who've been diagnosed with the bogus ADHD. Even the guy who came up with the ADHD term says it's basically bogus. It's just another made-up term, right? So amphetamines in particular, but not only amphetamines, a whole host of other drugs can't open people up to these unseen entities. And that's where the twain meets. That's where, you talk about the poltergeist activity. You talk about the hauntings. You talk about there's certain places, locations where horrific acts of abuse or violence or sadism occurred. It leaves a psychic, not only a psychic imprint on the place, but it opens up portals, right? And now, as you know, the fundamental concepts are changing. And so more and more of these portals are opening up all over the place. And a lot of the whole idea behind a lot of the ceremonial magic that's been going on is precisely to open up portals and let more of these entities in. And Tom Montauk came up with a great term, the organic portal, right? Describing these individuals who I think are hybridized to begin with and have a genetic, indeed a spiritual predisposition to being taken up as host by these unseen entities, right? So these organic portals, they're all around us in society because of the long-term hybridization agenda that's gone on with the reptilians and other alien races, mixing their DNA with human DNA. So it creates whole family trees of people with a genetic, indeed spiritual predisposition to being taken up as hosts. The garden variety example of that would be the extremely narcissistic abusers like Ted Bundy, Richard Ramirez, and others like them. But then you look into these hybrid controlling families that control this world. That's what they're all about. They're all hybridized. They're all entity possessed. And these super elite hybridized families, they know they're possessed. The whole purpose behind their ceremonies and behind a lot of their technology is to make not only themselves more hosted, but by extension, and that's a big part of what this transhuman agenda is all about, is to make whoever survives this mass culling that's underway, this kind of Borg, kind of obedient automaton, which is not only an automaton in that it just follows orders and what have you, but the consciousness that's been going to be put into it is this nether dimensional, malign consciousness that's coming from some other lower dimension. So because of the fundamental concepts are changing, the membrane, if you will, the veils between worlds are very porous and on the verge of total collapse. I would argue right now we're already in the fourth dimension. We're no longer, and my feeling is we're not in the third, because you do a lot of work in haunted houses, working in places where hauntings are. I would argue that places like abortion clinics, I would argue that places like funeral parlors, many of those places are not just like open portals for these entities, but they're magnets. It draws them in. And the increasingly, the 5G rollout that's going on, one of my colleagues who I've had on the show, Sue Plavetic, she goes around clearing houses of unwanted, you know, influences and entities and what have you. She has that etheric third eye vision, and she sees, not only does she see this, these shadow beings hanging around abortion clinics and whatnot, but she sees with these big cell phone towers and increasingly these 5G towers, she sees all this dark energy swirling around it, right? So that's a whole nother aspect to this. We have the global dimming aspect where, you know, entities like Bill Gates openly talking about dimming the sun. When we talked about that with chemtrailing, oh, we're crazy conspiracy theorists. But this rich psychopath like him, when he says it, oh, it must be good, right? So you have global dimming. You have the 5G rollout. All that is going on right now. What we're seeing here, Kim, is a massive effort at terraforming, at changing the very electromagnetic nature of this planet. And the soils are infused with aluminium. And there's all this genetic modification going on across the board, plants, animals, people. So unless we get this thing, or if not on the right track, at least throw a monkey wrench into this unfolding agenda behind, you know, that's going on. It's if we're not careful, the human race could just go right off the edge of a cliff.
If you wouldn't mind, you brought up a couple of key topics, and I want to kind of point those out so you could kind of give like a beginner's idea of what it means. Like, for instance, when we say portals, people don't have a clue. You know, they can't wrap their head around these things like portal. They have to be able to visualize. Like myself, I have to be able to visualize. What is a portal? If you have like some generic definitions for, so people can understand, you know, things like hybridized. What does that mean? Things like that. Fourth dimension. The veil. So if you could kind of just give us
Yeah, and I'll try to do it in 20 words or less, which is going to be kind of difficult. But a portal, think of it as like a window or opening. It may not be permanently opened. It may only open temporarily under the right. And it could be astronomical alignments. It could be some kind of ceremony. It could be through high technology. And it could be through the will and intention and the focusing of energy and intent by a single individual, be that individual a medicine man, a shaman, a medicine woman, a cryptid like a certain Sasquatch have the ability to open and close portals and use them to navigate, right? So, and this goes back to the lore of you know, cultural traditions the world over, right? So if you look at children's stories like the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, I talked earlier about how entities were coming in and out of Ted Bundy's closet when he was a child, right? Well, that's what the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe story, you know, the wardrobe is what Americans would call a closet. And so there is a portal opening in the wardrobe slash closet, which allows, in the story, I don't remember all the details, it allows these children to go into another realm, another dimension, Narnia, right? Mm-hmm. So in a nutshell, that's what a portal is. And some places have naturally occurring portals, places like Sedona and other places. And as far as hybridization is concerned, again, this goes back.
Let me stop you right there, because I want to give the viewers a little bit of a picture of, through my experience, what a portal might look like. So I've had the different visions where I would be laying in bed and it would like fly into your vision with your eyes closed. It's like having your eyes open. And it's like somebody is opening a closet. You are stepping through the closet, and at the other side of the closet is it like a gate, like a balcony, and then you're looking into another world. And that would be, I don't know if I opened it or if something, like you said, how do these things get open? And then Like you could just be laying there and all of a sudden your vision, inner vision, you're opening a door and you're walking through it. And there's been other instances where I saw that closet come over and then me go through the closet and show the gate. And then not right after that is when I saw that reptilian walking through my room. So now these are things that you could see with your inner vision and things like that. So, you know, maybe people just think they're dreams. Maybe they just think they're not real, but this is what might describe what a portal might look like. Also in Sedona, I was at the airport where a known portal is, and I was laying on my back looking up, and it was night. And I actually seen what looked like a UFO. It was just this light that darted over. And once it got right above me, all of a sudden it like disappeared. It's almost like it just went into a slit in the night sky. And that's why that portal is there at the airport. So that, you know, that is another way to picture when we say portals.
Those are all great examples. Let me just interject for a second, Kim, because I must add that Kim is a very gifted natural psychic. She has that etheric third eye vision going. So the point she made about how, whether it's in a dream or a mystical state, she can see these portals and she can even see into other realms. Your average person, and I don't mean this in a degrading, demeaning way, but like say your average person who hasn't fully developed their abilities or they're too suppressed, right, through, you know, processed food and everything else, they may feel a presence. They may feel, ooh, that room, there's something about that room I don't like. It's kind of creepy, right? Oh, but there's a portal in there. Now, the difference is that person may just feel creepiness, feel a presence, whereas someone like Kim can actually, if she spends enough time in there, not even have to be in the same room, she can see that there's a portal in there, okay? And what she described about, and I know the general area you're talking about in Sedona where that portal is, there are also portals in the sky where exactly what Kim described, where craft will fly in and out. They seem to fly into a hole, if you will, in the sky, and you can see the forward momentum, and then they just disappear at a certain point in space. That's because they've flown into a portal, right? And some of these portals scaled up are gigantic. I believe that one of the reasons why there was, if this is kind of advanced for some people, but the Orion Wars, which lasted for millions of years, involved a number of different extraterrestrial warring civilizations. One of the reasons why there was such a big war going on in the Orion constellation was because there was a big portal there that one side or the other, one faction or the other, wanted to gain control of. Right. So anyhow, please continue.
Okay. And then before we get into hybridization, could you just talk about the different dimensions? Like how would someone be able to see in their mind to understand what the dimensions are?
Well, for some of us, we actually go dimension hopping at times when we sleep, because when we sleep, our consciousness is freed from the limitations of our physical body, right? So what happens is our consciousness can then, depending on the energetic state we happen to be in at that time, can gain access to a number of other dimensions, other worlds. And some of these places, they may look very similar to our own, but there are other differences. And it's kind of a gray area. What's the difference between another dimension and alternate reality, right? Because that factors into this as well. This is just one reality we're in, but we have counterparts of ourselves that are coexisting in another parallel reality, which in relation to our timeline, our reality, may be a little like behind timeline-wise. The way it's been described to me is in some of these alternate realities, what are we up to, the iPhone 8 or whatever? In some of these other alternate realities, they're a little further behind. They're still like in the iPhone 5 or iPhone 4 or whatever. And in some alternate realities, they're a little further ahead, right? And in our reality, things are pretty much Orwellian they live science fiction already. But in some of these other alternate realities, you know, people have seen things like, you know, zombie outbreaks and whatnot, which is not beyond the realm of possibility here. I mean, there's a lot of factors involved, involving genetics, manipulation and utilization of parasites, and, you know, chemical-induced issues, which could lead to, for lack of a better term, zombieism. So I'm not ruling that out as a possibility. You know, we're already seeing the FLACA outbreaks of people using these weird designer drugs and going mad, entity possessed, and just, you know, cannibalizing on others, right? So, but point of relevance is people in their dream state have gone into alternate realities and they've seen these zombie outbreaks going on. So they're all running in parallel, but I do believe that the veils between worlds and at times there's an intersecting, if you will, of timelines, of alternate realities that some people have the natural means to, in their sleep state, go into other realities. So I don't know if that answers your question. Again, it's kind of a gray area in my mind. I really haven't figured out the basic differences between another dimension and another reality. I would say other dimensions can be completely off the wall, completely different in relation to our own, right? Where the laws of physics just don't apply in some of these other places as we understand them. But I also must point out that there was an artificial divide created in the UFO field many years ago. People like Dr. Jacques Vallée played a key role in this, where they try to say there was, you know, there are no extraterrestrials, it's all interdimensional. But that's not the case. Some of these extraterrestrial civilizations who are in our physical reality, in our cosmos, but they're in another star system, however distant, right? Because a lot of these beings have developed the means of near instantaneous or very fast interstellar travel. Some of these civilizations have also developed an interdimensional capability. They have, and some of the crashed UFOs that were recovered, they found what's been described as an interspatial resonator or something along those lines, where it allows the occupants of the craft to alter the density and the vibration of the craft externally and internally, which means the occupants of the craft themselves. It allows them to change the vibration of the resonance of the craft, which allows them to go into other realms, other dimensions. So some of the craft that have been recovered are interdimensional also. But you know, people try to create this division, between, asthma is acting up, between extraterrestrial and interdimensional, but there is no division between them because some beings, some civilizations have developed the means to do this. And we know through Earth's lore, through ceremonial magic, what have you, that many people, and even what you would consider to be good, you know, shaman, good medicine men, good medicine women, they've long since developed the ability to look into, go into, and interact with beings from other dimensions. So there's the whole family of hallucinogenic plants, what have you, that are used in ceremonial fashion, play a role in this. The whole idea in many cases is for them to be able to see into, interact with, and go to other dimensions consciously. So hope that...
No, seriously, the inner spatial resonator, that kind of makes sense about the resonating and the vibration and the things. And we can, move past that. But I did want to give the viewers an idea of what it might look like to see a different dimension. So there was an experience that I had where the left eye was seeing into the room that I was in, but the right eye, it was like there was a line separating. The right eye was seeing a stream of water and some trees. It's like out in the forest somewhere. And there was a line that separated my vision from the reality, this one reality, where I could have been in both. And so to me, that was like a perfect example of what it is to not only resonate, like the resonator that you said you found on the spacecraft, what it is to resonate in two different realities at the same time. And so I wanted to mention as well is if you can change your vibration, you can have different experiences. Like, for instance, you could walk into a room and you know you put something there. And a few minutes later, you walk in the room and that's not there anymore. And then you come back and there it is. I mean, there's all this phenomenon that could be happening. People just think they're crazy. But, you know, it all comes down to resonating and the vibration and things that helps to create these different realities and these different things. You know, you mentioned timelines and things like that, but let's go ahead. And so one of the big topics here that you talked about a lot is the hybridized families or the hybridized people. And so when you think of hybrids, you think that somebody was genetics have been messed with, or that they were born with a different species of genetics to where that they've now become a hybrid. Can you explain that?
Yes. What I meant by hybridization is, and there's been a lot of research into alien-human hybrids over the years. What we're talking about is, again, it goes back to, you know, the dawn of time. It goes back into the lore of, you know, the cultural traditions around the world. This notion that the gods, if you will, extraterrestrials, call them what one will, but the gods in the old days would interbreed with typically human women, but also with human men. And the progeny that resulted from this interbreeding would be these demigods, these hybridized half human, half gods that had all these abilities, right? And I was a big fan when I was a boy of Greek mythology, and that's all about hybridization. It's all about, like, Heracles, for example, was the offspring between a mortal earth woman and Zeus. Now, what was interesting was, you know, oftentimes these gods would take on, there were shapeshifters, right? What we call shapeshifters now. And if you look at the stories of Alexander the Great, how his mother said that Zeus in the form of a serpent, go figure, reptilian, right? Had its way with her sexually, impregnated her, and out of that begat Alexander, who was born with this compulsion to go conquer. Later on, he conquered most of the known world by the time he was 33. He only turned back from India because his whole army, what was left of it, rebelled against him. And then you look at Julius Caesar, who, according, again, to the lore of chroniclers of the time, his mother was impregnated by an incubus, right? This non-human supernatural being. And again, history is rife with the lore of all these folkloric traditions, is rife with these notions of these other beings, these other creatures wanting to have intercourse with human women in particular. And so Julius Caesar's mother is impregnated by an incubus. Julius comes into the world bent on conquest, takes over modern Gaul, modern day France, Belgium, vast territory. That's why the people in France and Belgium speak a Latinized language, French, which is based on the Roman Latin, is because of Julius Caesar and all the slaves that Julius Caesar, you know, brought back from Gaul, et cetera, et cetera. See, that was all about, there's this concept of conquest and this reptilian concept of human ownership, which what they've done is they managed to imbue and transfer that concept from the pureblood reptilians into their hybridized progeny. So this is why so many of these elite reptilian hybridized families are just bent on total conquest. They're bent on total subjugation in every facet of the human race. They see the human race as a chattel, as a domesticated livestock, if you will. It's there for their sadistic pleasure to torture, to kill, to rape. And notice how they manage through their control of Hollywood, their control of the media, their control of the university school system, they've not only inculcated people with this cultural Marxist, essentially narcissistic mindset, but a narcissism in its purest form, where you have like this whole breed of social justice warriors who have no understanding of history. They have no understanding of what communism or socialism is all about. All they want, they're just hell-bent on just taking from others. Again, this freeloading mentality, taking from others, destroying, and it's nihilism and destruction for destruction's sake, all in the pursuit of like a better society after somehow. Somehow after all this violence, all this chaos, but that falls right in line with the order out of chaos mentality that we see in the graduated Masonic degrees at some point in order to remake society, to remold it in an image which suits these reptilian human hybridized controllers. And it must be understood that the ruling bloodline elite, the reptilian human hybridized bloodlines, which we know as the royal families, et cetera, they're merely the plantation managers of this planet. They're not the ones at the top of the heap. Right. You always hear about the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers. Those guys are about, right, you know, a third of the way down, maybe halfway down the top of the ladder. They get their marching orders and they carry them out, but they have hordes of minions beneath them. So what this hybridized elite have done is they've created this Babylonian system of control around us, all based on, you know, worship of Saturn, worship of all these dark gods that people don't realize it, right? And so what they've done with their Hollywood is they've made it cool, chic, and trendy for all these gullible people watching TV to think, oh, wow, look at, you know, these halftime extravaganzas in the Super Bowl. You know, how cool is that? They have no idea that they're looking at a black magic spectacle right in front of them. It's when you look at the terms they use, broadcasting, right, casting, spell casting, this invocation over and over and over. It's like, hate Trump, hate Trump, hate Trump. That's magic. That's black magic spell casting going on. Mm-hmm. Hate white people, hate white people, hate white people, mm-hmm, white supremacists, racism, over and over and over. Because the powers that be sees the white race, quite frankly, as their main antagonist. They have such a disdain for all other races that, mm-hmm, they just hold them beneath contempt. They're their main adversary. To them is the white race. It has to be eradicated. That's their main stumbling block towards total control over this planet. But I'm glad to say there's a big pushback. You mentioned earlier that so many people will never get it. Well, that's their malfunction. We live in a world, despite all the control and despite all the internet censorship, the information is out there to be had, right? And I don't believe in Darwinianism, because I believe that was especially in light of this alien reptilian hybridized agenda that's been going on for a long time. But there is something to this notion of survival of the fittest. These people that just go along with the prevailing narrative because the TV people tell them what to think and who to hate, right? Many of them won't be around much longer, right? So there is a culling underway, but it's also survival of the fittest. That it's to the point now where it's almost self-defeating to go around. This is just how I feel about it. It doesn't have to be how anyone else feels about it. But it's almost self-defeating in a way to go around and try to crusade and try to wake all these other people up.
Yeah, because I'm at that point too.
Yes, because so many of them are so hypnotized. They have a reflexive knee-jerk program response to defend this Luciferian, Babylonian, reptilian system. So in your zeal, in one zeal, to help them, because we are empaths, we have love and we have loving kindness within us, and we plead with them, please wake up. They're going to see us as, oh, these are those crazy people the TV people are telling us about. Mm-hmm. And so everything gets turned around, we become vilified, we become demonized. No, I'm not into that. It's like, let them figure it out, because we can only work strategically towards viable solutions, viable outcomes. And to me, it's a Pollyanna mindset to think we're going to wake everybody up. No, that's simply impossible. But there'll always be pockets of resistance, little cells of people who work mostly independently of one another, and that's the way it should be, because independent cells will be harder to track down and annihilate rather than, you know, these big groups that form, you know, the alt-right and all that stuff, which were controlled in many ways opposition from the beginning. But it takes someone with an understanding of how intelligence, counterintelligence, deception operations work. And I've spent my whole life studying such things. So it's easier for me to see through this than it would be for others.
Is that about an hour? Because I really do think we can do one more if you have the time. Can we do one more hour? That would be
yeah, great. Absolutely. Yeah.
We've only just touched on this. So let's take a little break. Do you want to come back in, 5, 10 minutes? Or what?
Yeah, sure. Sure. Come back in 5.
Okay.